with one, the applicability section that we're gonna reinstate, I believe, and then change the lines that was what was discussed and Rick.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll move and ask unanimous consent that we adopt the committee substitute in your packet dated March 28th, 1984, and move and ask unanimous consent for the adoption of that committee substitute at this time.
Are there any objections?
The memo goes on top of it, even though it isn't dated. I dated the top of mine. And then I'll move and ask unanimous consent that we add a new section to this bill, which is called applicability, section 0845040, and it will read Alaska Statutes 08.45010. -0845.040 apply 1 year after the first 8 licenses are issued under this chapter, period, after AS 08450-08.45.040 becomes applicable, the board shall exercise the powers and duties of the department under this chapter. And I would move and ask unanimous consent that that would be inserted after line 23 in the new committee substitute.
Or where appropriate.
Or where appropriate.
Yeah. Do I hear any objections? So be it. Now we would.
Okay, then I'll move and ask unanimous consent that we pass out the committee substitute for House Bill number 347, Labor and Commerce, as amended.
Do I hear any objections? So be it. Okay.
Pass out a committee substitute or a bill amended.
This committee substitute has amended, yes.
It actually has an AM at the end.
So,
I mean, we're a morning committee.
We couldn't have done this without you.
Then, the next one, you'll have to find.
Teleconference moderator, and as you know, on the committee after the events, well, certainly has called to order, and I believe we're prepared to move on to substitute for House Bill 610 at this time. I'll turn control of the teleconference to the chairman, Representative Cowdery. All the members of the House Labor Commerce Committee are present this morning.
Yes, this is Representative Cowdery, chairing the Labor and Commerce Committee. House Bill 610 has been changed considerably in drafting of this committee substitute. Most of the substance of the original bill 610 dealt with was creation of a board of billers. In the committee substitute, the reference to a board of billers has been deleted and the focus is turned to enforcement of current regulations. Under this committee substitute, the Department of Commerce and Economic Development will be granted the authority to hire investors, police the construction job sites to ensure all contractors on job are licensed or complying to the law. The investigators will be given the authority to write citations for violations which they discover during their investigation. This is covered in section 5 on page 2, and a sectional analysis of the committee substitute has been prepared and provided by the Legal Services Division. And we have Clark Greening here from the Home Builders Association. Would you like to testify on this and how we got where we are on this, perhaps, Clark?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm not too sure I can answer that question.
Well, we work with the home builders, at least.
Just so happened, Mr. Chairman, they're meeting this morning on other business and would be here in force otherwise, but they've asked me to look this over, and I've had a chance this morning to briefly go over it, and I think it's a vast improvement over the original bill. I think it simplifies things, and as a starting point, it may be worth pushing out of the committee. I think that the primary thing that it does is to put enforcement authority in the Department of Commerce, and with a fiscal note, enable existing regulations to be enforced. And I think that's the primary concern of the builders, that we have regulations that require bonding and licensing, but haven't heretofore had a real concerted effort to enforce those provisions, and creating any new agency to do it wouldn't necessarily be any better than the present situation, unless there was some money there and some investigators to actually go out and see that there was bonding and licensing on job. I noticed that there's a new provision in Section 1 that makes it illegal, a misdemeanor, for a general to hire a specialty contractor unless that person is also registered. There's a little bit of vagueness in that section. It says that in effect, the offense would be committed if the contractor authorizes a person. I would think that the language may be to allow or to permit the person to begin work, because a general contractor may bring someone on that's going to do work in the future. The person or firm that's acting as a specialty contractor may say, don't worry, I'm bonded and licensed. Later, before beginning work, the general finds out upon checking, and this law, in effect, if it becomes law, puts the obligation on the general to do that. In effect, that that contractor would do so at his own risk if he brought someone in, but I think you would want to make the offense, if you're going to retain this provision, actually occur when the person begins work, rather than the authorization, which can take place many weeks before. I would also put a provision in there that the person also be required to be registered under this chapter, because there's a series of exceptions in the law, and I want those to be, it should be clear that those exceptions apply to this provision as well. So you might have it read something like this: it is unlawful for a general contractor to allow a person required to be registered under this chapter to begin work. I think that might help clarify that section. There is no, I notice in the statute, no definition of person, which I assume that in this chapter anyway, which would include an individual as well as a corporation or partnership. Normally, generals apply hire employees, and I think either the regulations or the statute want to make it clear as to when this person is acting as a specialty and when that person is acting as an employee, because it wouldn't be an offense. In other words, if this person were doing work as an employee, but there would be in a situation where he was acting as a specialty. I think Risa pointed this out, and I think it's a good point, and maybe she can elaborate on it, but as far as the requirement the registration number be included in all advertising, you might want to have an effective date that takes place after the yellow pages expire and so forth. In other words, there's advertising already in the works, and will be already in place by July 1st of 84. So I think you want to have a later effective date for that particular provision. But in the main, the builders would be in support of this effort to strengthen existing requirements in the law.
Yeah, Representative Furnish, and then Representative Hill.
Will we?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, perhaps just as a matter of clarification, we state Section 1, Line 11, it is unlawful for a general contractor to, the changes mean I would suggest permit a person to begin work. I'm not sure what the current statute says about a general contractor and what their requirements are under the law. the point being made here, we said it's unlawful for this general contractor to authorize a special contractor, but we need to also make sure that it is unlawful for a person to serve in the capacity of a general contractor who is not a licensed and bonded contractor of the state. But I'm not sure if that's already covered, that's fine.
Yeah, that's covered. That's the main part of the law. It starts with the first part of Chapter 18, and where registration is required. It says it's unlawful presently. It says it's unlawful for a person to submit a bid or work as a contractor until that person has been issued a certificate of registration by the Department of Commerce and Economic Development.
All right, then that this is a logical follow-through there.
What it does is put an obligation on the general contractor to help police the statute in regard to specialties that they're hiring, and that's why our concern, we have a little concern on how it's presently written.
Representing Furnish, you through?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Ewing, and then Representative
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. There was a suggestion by Clark in this first section. I was wondering if we could make it a little bit more specific. I think that if we leave person in there, we're going to be in a big world of hurt. On the first section there. Clark, did you have a suggestion to allow a person, a partnership or a corporation, or how can we get that so that that's a little bit more specific? There must be a way of getting that in there, because I think a person leaves it very ambiguous. It isn't right.
List a contractor?
Well, the ambiguity is when this, a person could be acting as a specialty. Yeah. In other words, a person normally in the statutes is used in the broad sense to mean any entity, and I think if you want this section to be effective, you have to include individuals as well as corporations or partnerships, because many firms act are really DBA,
sure.
and one, there's just one person involved, but the problem comes in is to when, say, an individual is working for a general, that person is really an employee as opposed to acting as an independent contractor, and I think perhaps there needs to be, in the exception portion of the law, a clarification as when that person really is acting as an independent contractor. There's a lot of law on that as to when a person is an independent contractor.
So,
yeah.
Do we have a suggestion?
You could use the word individual, corporation, or partnership.
Yes.
Unless you're going to have a definition of person in the chapter, you could use those individual names.
In other words, you could say individual, partnership, or corporation. Are you suggesting putting that wording into law?
Well, I think we'd be better off in the exception section to say that a person acting as an employee of a general wouldn't be required in an employment relationship. You theoretically could employ a partnership or an individual in the general could, and that the key is whether this person, individual, corporation, or partnership is required to be registered. If they're required to be registered for this particular work, and the general goes ahead and authorizes them or permits them or allows them to begin work, then the offense is committed.
Okay, I would just like to get the correct language
yes,
in there, so
yes,
it's legally correct.
Maybe Sam can add to.
Well, we ask the Department of Commerce.
Yes.
They work with this. What the different changes could be.
You was next, Sam. And if Harry, would you have some comments? Perhaps you could. I think Representative Wente has departed.
We want you.
Clark, you know, you're such a fine man, I'd like to just maybe ask you a question from here. It's looking at this section 4, which raises the amount of the bonds to $10,000 for a general and $5,000 for a specialty, is there any adverse feelings on the part of the industry to putting that at a higher level. Do you feel comfortable with that level? Do you think that level is high enough?
Let's say, put it this way, I wouldn't say there was unanimity among the industry on raising it, but by and large, the home builders are happy with, or comfortable with the amount being raised. I imagine, and we're not representing a lot of specialty contractors here, but there are probably specialty contractors that are comfortable with it being raised. But as far as the industry goes, within the association, the Alaska State Association of Home Builders, they're comfortable with this particular increase. As to whether, what level, what point the pain begins to arrive, I don't know. We haven't approached that question. How high you can go. As you raise it, obviously, some of the smaller firms would have problems. I'm talking mostly about specialties contractors. But if people, general contractors working on homes, for example, this particular increase isn't going to mean a lot in terms of out-of-pocket costs.
Well, then, if I may, Mr. Chairman, my last question is, do you have any economic information on what it costs a contractor to get a $10,000 bond, or what it costs a specialty to get a $5,000 bond, just what the economic loss or cost to them is?
We're on teleconference. Maybe we should, I think we've got some people in Fairbanks, but we should push that thing down.
What the cost, Sam?
Yeah, what cost, Sam?
From 250 to 500.
Yeah, okay. The difference would be probably less than several hundred dollars total for a year's bonding. But I can probably get the specific figures today. You'd be meeting with the group. Probably somebody on the line can give you exact that.
Harry?
Mr. Chairman, yesterday we were told that a specialty contractor paid, $430 for a $2,000 bond. And in calling and talking to some of the insurance companies that does the bonding, it also reflects the information we received, that it reflects on their assets and how much it's reachable and who they can put the policy out to or who they can sell that bonding requirement to. So there is a variation in that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I noticed that Mr. Furness is the original sponsor, so I just defer to him on this level. It's just an issue. It's still, if you're comfortable with the economics, Representative Furness, even at the elevated level, it's pretty hard to get relief. This will help a lot, but it's hard to get relief in the courts for purchasers from the bonding company.
Chairman, if I may comment.
Representative Furness.
This level was recommended in the various hearings that we held throughout the state. There are some who would like to take it as high as $50,000, and the chairman thought that may have been too much of a leap in a very short span of time. So as far as I know, that there is a great deal of support for raising it to $5,000 and $10,000. I would suggest we leave it at that.
And I think that perhaps commenting on what Clark had said, that there are in place statutes of already concerning a lot of this. It just has to be enforced. One area that we discussed, I think, in our last hearing, the fact that that the liability of that you're not really liable in Alaska courts to pay a contractor that's not licensed, but I think it would be a gray area if this contractor furnished materials to your job, even though he was unlicensed, whether you would be liable for the materials. And sometimes that could be greater than the cost to the contractor that was actually illegal. So I think that's even though we have statutes in force that you're not liable to pay, I think it's kind of a gray area. He could go out, for instance, for a driveway. What's the main cost of that is the concrete for the driveway. So, it's food for thought on that area. Representative Furness, did you have any?
No.
Do we have, Risa, did you have any comments on? Well, I just sat there.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Risa King with Associated General Contractors. We have about three technical things, like Mr. Greeny mentioned, that, one is that language we believe should be cleared up in section one and make sure that it's specifically talking about hiring a specialty contracting independent, like company versus a person, because there could be some confusion in the field. And the advertising problem of the yellow pages coming out in the near future, that an effective date change would be a very good ticket to January 1986, something like that, which gives them plenty of time. There's a, something we have a bit concerned with is the new section authorizing the Department of Commerce and Economic Development enforcement and citation powers. The Department of Labor is out there, and Commerce would be out there also. We think that it ought to be one department or the other issuing the citation. And we couldn't care less which one it is, but it could get confusing on job sites. And just to avoid conflicting regulations coming out of the department, we think that it ought to be one department or the other. And that's up to your discretion of how, which one you want and how you want to handle it. The there has been some talk about a fiscal note on this bill for extra seasonal investigators, and we think that is a very good idea. Also, something we believe that's very critical in this is consumer education. And not necessarily can that be written into the bill, but maybe coordination amongst the departments and public service announcements, some booklets to be down at city permit offices for people who are going in to get a permit for their home. Classroom education for high school students so they can take the information home to their parents, that sort of thing. We think it's very critical because that's the real importance is the consumer out there when he's hiring somebody, and he's the one who's going to get stung too. That's our main points on the bill. If you have any questions, Mr. Chairman, I try to respond.
Yes. Harry, could you
take her on?
No,
yeah,
sir.
Would you like to respond to what?
Did you hear that?
Yes.
Intimidated. Mr. Chairman, my only comment would be that we agree with both Mr. Greening and Risa. We would strongly suggest that both departments could handle the enforcement effort as it is accomplished right now. You have Department of Labor specialists that are electrical inspectors and plumbing inspectors, and you have investigators in the Department of Commerce that we handle all of the licensing areas. As it works out right now, both of the investigators and the inspectors work together. The law as it's written right now says that the Department of Labor will issue the cease and desist orders. So, and an example is that we have three state agencies that handle the guide board. We do the administrative function for the guide board, the Fish and Wildlife Protection does the enforcement, and of course the Department of Law handles the litigation. That's my only comments. Other than that, we would have agree with Risa and Mr. Green.
Representative Lindstedt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I comment, I don't know for one or both.
Mike, put your mic on.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. First, Risa, mm-hmm. You mentioned the idea of a fiscal note for enforcement. One of the big things that we've been hearing on this bill is what we need is enforcement of laws, not just laws. So from that, your comment, I'm assuming that that's what you're supporting.
Yes, sir.
Harry, have you done a fiscal note on this at all with this new version of the bill? Do you have any idea what it's going to cost us to do this? I mean, do it right?
Representative, on the new version, no, I have not, but I'll have one to the committee this afternoon. one of the things when we talk about enforcement and the laws on the books, the laws on the books right now say issue a cease and desist order. The gentleman takes that and he goes around the corner and he starts business someplace else. There's no compliance. But with the bill as it's written now, you would have a citation and a mandatory appearance that he has to answer for that unlicensed activity. So in response to your question, I think the concept of having part-time seasonal people when the construction season is in effect would be cost-effective, and that it would serve the purpose of the bill, and that we would be doing something on the law.
Representative Furness.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know on the original bill there was a referral to finance, and I'm not sure if there's a fiscal note already developed. Is there? I just thought of.
Yes, sir. On the original bill.
But that also.
Investigators.
I think it included board cost also. Right, no, sir.
No.
The original bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a question to Ms. King. And you mentioned that there should be an effective date for the advertising requirement that's different from the date of the bill. Would, say, July 1, 1985 be acceptable? It would be a year from this July, and most of the contracts for that kind of thing do come about in the summer.
I imagine most of the phones, our phone books were what we were concerned about. We'll do some checking around, but I would imagine probably July 85 would be perfectly all right.
Thank you.
I'd like to ask Harry on this cease and desist orders that are existing now. I know in the trucking industry or something to say if you have a trailer or something that's unlicensed and you get caught, they generally stop it right there. I mean, if you're at a scale or wherever you're caught, it's pretty well shut down until you do to get legal. I was wondering, could we put teeth in? I mean, that's not the case as in this. Is that what you're saying?
Mr. Chairman, not an attempt to replace Don Rickles, but with your trucking industry, you can impound the truck. With the construction contractor, we can't impound his tools. And the cease and desist order, in all reality, is nothing but a piece of paper that the gentleman, he's unlicensed to begin with, he goes around the corner, and we lose track of him. We don't have someone to stay right on him. He either goes to work for someone else or he starts another project on his own. So he's lost in the population again.
Yes. Any other? Has the committee had an opportunity to go through other sections of the bill? And we have people on the line. Perhaps Mr. Johnson in Fairbanks, do you have any comments on the committee substitute?
Yes, I do.
Would you care to identify yourself, spell your last name, if you would, and give your testimony?
My name is Marvin L. Johnson, J-O-H-N-S-O-N, and I'm in Fairbanks, and my address is 161 8th Avenue. On this substitute bill, where you were discussing the Section 1, Paragraph B, use the word allow or authorize as is now, I think what it should say is unlawful for a general contractor to contract a person or company or some sort of that contract. That puts them all down. And in the investigative citation part, I think that's outstanding. Section 18120, paragraph A. That is outstanding. I think that's very good. The B of in the bonding, I think the increase of the bond is good.
Marvin, if you could When you're talking about the sections, give us the page number and line number. It'd be helpful for the other committee members.
Page 2, line 7.
Thank you.
The bonding. You have it now as $10,000 and $5,000. Now, that is good bonding, with the exception of one thing. It don't protect the consumer. All this protects, the surety bond is the taxes and that sort of thing for the federal government and for the state. Now, I think that what should be done is have a bond that covers the actual job. Every contractor should maintain a bond equal to the amount of the job. Now, I've had experience in the last couple of years, and I got took for quite a bit of money because the contractor had a little old lousy $5,000 bond. And that's all you can get out of the man. Now, I think that they should have better bonding law. And the investigation part is good. That's on page 2. And also the...
Marvin, if we could comment, break right in right there. I think that the, you know, what you're talking about is more of a performance bond. I think the consumer... can have that requirement now if they deem it necessary, and perhaps should be more informed of that. But I think performance bond for what they're supposed to do in performing the contract is what more that you're talking about.
You're correct there. But what I'm thinking about is all these old widows and old people like myself that are getting took by these fly-by-nighters. And if they're not got the bond, they can't do it to you. In California, you're required to have a bond to the amount of the contract. And I don't see why in the state of Alaska can't get up to date. Now, in the address portion,
you want to argue with
them? On this bill is where the contractor has his address. I think that the man must give a legal address and for the place of business. His mailing address, I could care less. It's where he does his business. In other words, the actual location of his job. This contractor that I had, he had a post office box. I have till this day, 2.5 years later, to find out where his actual place of business is. And I've spent $2,500 in law fees trying to do it. So I think that the person that issued these licenses should be required, the man that's registering should be required to show that he has a legal residence in this state, a piece of ground, a building that he has his equipment on, where a person could go and see his equipment and all that stuff, see if he's qualified to do your jobs. Now they go around and up and down the streets and soliciting work. I have them day in and day out coming by my place trying to solicit work. And I think that it's the state's responsibility, then they have the authority to regulate these people. And this second version you have here is a far cry from the first version. I know it's a watered-down version to get it passed. And it's a beginning. I agree with it. It's a beginning. But the first one was an outstanding piece of legislation if they could have got it passed. I think that the what the state should do is establish a vocal standards commission of some sort, which regulates all this instead of a Department of Commerce or some of these other things. Have a vocational standards in the state, and then they are qualified a lot better than these others for this. And that's about all I have. I'm at least glad that they got something on, trying to get on the books. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Johnson. We've certainly worked, spent a lot of effort to try to get something that's going to be acceptable and maybe become law. Representative Furness has a comment or a question.
Probably to Mr. Traeger, if you could come back to the table. I think the gentleman makes
Traeger.
A good point, page one, lines 26, in fact, 928, maybe what we want to do is expand that to say, show the contractor's name and business address shall be shown. Because you're right, a person could use a post office box, you'll never find that post office box.
Mr. Chairman, what about legal address? What would be?
Well, your legal address is where you get your mail.
P.O. box could be business address.
Well,
there's, I think that there's lots of businesses, legitimate businesses that work under P.O. boxes, and I think that you're probably asking what's the actual business,
business location.
Maybe not mailing, but perhaps.
Their business location, as you said, Mr. Chairman, might be their back their pickup truck.
Yeah.
What's that?
You might want to say mailing and principal place of business.
Principal so place of business.
Clear that even legal, by saying legal and business, you can still use that as a post office box. So I think you want to have both mailing and principal place of business.
Yeah, but Mr. Chairman, we probably don't want to have them include both of those. If you say and, or if you say are, you know that.
I would say and.
And then a person is subject to putting the post office box in and the other actual location address on signs.
Sometimes they're the same.
I know they are, but in case one
I don't want to burden the legislation too much.
Yeah, I don't have an objection to doing it. It may be a little cumbersome, but the gentleman does make a good point that you ought to be able to identify the actual business location.
Principal place of business.
Yeah. Yes, perhaps we could work that in. Do you have any comments, Harry, on that?
No, Mr. Chairman, I would agree.
And,
Chairman?
Yes, Mr. Johnson?
Back in Fairbanks again.
Yes.
There's one other thing I would like to bring to your attention. It's not in this bill, but it should be incorporated. That no company could use the word Alaska as a part of the name of their company. Say, for instance, a guy say, I'm Johnson Alaska or Pedro Alaska. I think that's misleading. That gives the impression that all the state of Alaska is supporting them or they are a big thing. I think it ought to be knocked out. Also, the use of the word custom building. I think, according to the dictionary, a custom builder is only a builder that's building something for a particular person at a particular time. I think that would be, those two words should be not allowed to be used in the building trade, or what I mean in their advertising.
Was this one of your constituents?
Thank you. I'm not certain that we could do that legally. I think that there's a lot of organizations now that use Alaska just for reference. There's probably a lot of, I can state in Anchorage, you look in the phone book, Alaskan Plumbing and Heating, I think it's an old Alaska company from the early construction days, and many of them, and I don't know that we could get that enforced, and I'd hate to put something in that would destroy the whole bill on account of something like that. I understand what you're saying, but I don't know if we can do that.
Mr. Chairman, may make note
that Representative Furness has got a comment.
Thank you. That most people use Alaska in order to get a better position in the telephone book. You call yourself Zawaki, you end up in the last of the book. You call yourself A or Alaska or whatever, you get at least in the beginning of the book. So that's one of the rationales.
Except for so many people.
You know, I think constitutionally everyone probably has a right to use the name of their choice rather than restrict this false advertising or something. That's another issue, but maybe that's what you're saying, that perhaps we should tighten up the false advertising or the fraud advertising, but I don't know, Mr. Johnson, if we could do that or not. A representative Copeland has a comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't want to burden the legislation. I'd like to see it pass, but it's a possibility that, in line with one of Mr. Johnson's suggestions, the customer, of course, today has the right to ask for a performance bond. It's usually assumed then under the general cost of the construction, but many people don't realize they have it. Perhaps we might include a section such as a contractor may be required to post a performance bond, et cetera, which would be then discretionary and would work in with Ms. King's reference to consumer education as well, that they would know that such a thing can be required.
I don't think that we...
We don't have to worry about amendments, we'll just look over it.
Right.
I'm not certain that that we have enthusiastic support for that idea, but I think that, you know, it could cover if someone came to put a fence in or anything. I think there's a lot of consumer services that are out there that somebody comes to repair, does repair or change a furnace or something like that, that we might really be creating a bureaucracy. And I don't know if the role of government, I think there's a certain amount of consumer bewareness that everybody, perhaps the educational way that we might do that. If there is a performance bond, it ends up costs the consumer. That's passed, the cost is passed on to those. And
it is part of the contract, general contract cost, and of course would have to be negotiated prior to undertaking. You can't ask for a performance bond after the job is underway. It's a little after the fact. So the mechanics of it definitely would have to be, if it were to be included, it would have to be put in such a way that it would be part of the initial contracting agreement.
Thank you. I note that we have Mike, is it Kahn in Anchorage? Mike, do you have some, are you still online, and do you have some comments on the bill?
Am I on?
You're on, Mike.
Yes, my name is Mike Kahn, K-A-H-M, and I'm a local painting contractor here in Anchorage. And I'm down here for the support of this bill. I had something to interject in that thing about the bonding. Every job, as a specialty contractor, I do a volume of work on different levels of finance, and it would really be impractical for me to cover every job that I do with a bond. That's why this initial, I think the initial raise of this bonding amount brings forth to the public that the contractor will be sufficiently financially secure enough to handle the business that he's contracting. Plus, I'm in support for this to ensure the public that a person that's working in the respect of a contractor has the talent and has the financial security behind him to perform in the right manner upon the project that he's working on.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Mike, does that conclude your testimony?
Yeah, I believe it does at this time. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there anyone else in either out on the network that wish to testify on this bill?
Yes, I do, here in Fairbanks.
Yes. Would you state your name for the record, spell your last name, please, and give your testimony at this time?
My name is Terry Duzinski. That's Duzinski. And what I'd like to comment on is this page 2, line 6, Section 08-18-120, Investigations and Issuance of Citations. I am very happy to see this in the bill, and I'm wondering if this will include all contractors, even electrical contractors, who are working in violation of state licensing, or persons working as electrical contractor without license.
Yes, it would include all contractors. It doesn't distinguish between electrical, plumbing, or any contractor. Would you say that's true, Harry?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, that's the way I would read it.
This is what I was very interested in, to see the number of electrical contractors or persons working as electrical contractors without a license. There's quite a few of those as well, and I'd like to see them stopped with a citation like this on the spot. So I'm very happy to see that. That's all I have to say.
Okay, thank you. We appreciate you coming down. Are there anyone else in either Fairbanks or Anchorage that...
My name is Earl Carlisle, Earl's Custom Home Painting, Carlisle, C-A-R-L-Y-L-E.
You got it.
I haven't really had a chance to study this new bill, but it looks good from all indications. There is one point one lady brought up about the Yellow Pages. We need enforcement of the advertisement part of it immediately, because there's so many of us who advertise in the papers, and we're competing against these fly-by-nighters. The news right now has, the Anchorage News has, 2 licensed people and 14 unlicensed people in the painting section alone. They have about 60 unlicensed people. We're screening them at this point, and we're going to send it to the governor's office. Maybe he can do something about it. We're screening their paper right now. I've got people working on it. And, there's about 60 unlicensed in the news, and there's about 45 in the Times. And the season hasn't even started. We need enforcement immediately on that. These people are coming in by the truckloads now, and it's getting pretty tight up here, not because it's not working, because there's a lot of competition that shouldn't be out there. And we need to move this thing forward. It's not everything we wanted, and it's not everything we need, but it's a good bill. It's a start. And I assure you, if we get this bill passed, we are coming back again next year to refine it and strengthen it and do all we can to really come up with a bill that the state can live with from now on. And I can make that promise to you now, if we get this bill passed, we're going to keep moving on it. And we're going to do a little bit about the out-of-state license plates on the contracting sites, too. I've already started working on that a little bit. The governor's going to hear about me that pretty quick. I guess that's about all I got to say. Over.
Yeah, Earl, I think that the advertising and contract on the line 29 that we talked about on page 1 and line 1 on page 2, I think that perhaps many contractors that are legal now that are illegal in every way, and we was going to move the effective date up to allow, if they've already got ads in the Yellow Pages of the newspaper, to perhaps... so they wouldn't be illegal, would have that grandfathering in, and that was the intent of the effective date extension.
Yeah, well, on the newspapers, most of them advertising newspapers right now are just hitting the state border, and they prey on the newspaper, whereas the guys in the Yellow Pages, they've got a place at last. The ones in the Yellow Pages now had to go in last September and October. So they do have some intent of becoming residents. All we have to do is just kind of force them over the line and make them get licensed. Most of them will respond. However, under the painting section in the Yellow Pages, Anchorage, there's 29 unlicensed contractors in there now. And also there's about 5 or 6 of them that's already folded. But the one that's going to stay, I don't think it'll take much to make them become licensed, because they've already got an investment. The rest of them, they split, you know, they run out of money and go. So the Yellow Pages, we really need in the Yellow Pages one to go to submit for a new ad to make them prove that they're licensed to the Yellow Pages people, even though they're not a policing agent. they should make it mandatory that if you want to advertise on the listing of some type of contractor, you've got to prove that they are a contractor. Bring their license in and have it copied and keep it on file at the Yellow Page Company and so for their records, and they can prove that they're licensed and go ahead and get their under the contractors section. However, they could have it another section in there saying non-licensed workers or you know something. I don't know how to handle it. Like these carpet people, these carpet salesmen, all that, they're all licensed. They're all advertising under the contractor sections. So, you know, they say we install and so forth, and they're not licensed. They sub it all out to unlicensed contractors, wallpaper people, some painting companies, some painting sales companies, wallpaper companies, and a lot of cabinet companies and so forth. You know, they're strictly suppliers, and they are advertising we install, and they just sub it out to somebody else who's not licensed, and that guy hides behind them, and nobody gets a license, and nobody responsible. So that needs to be refined really to a great detail so we can get a handle on it. But in most cases, we could force or, you know, coax most of the guys that are advertising right now into getting licenses because we can put a lot of pressure on them if they're not. Over.
Yeah, Earl, that's that section that I just said is it's difficult for us to distinguish whether you advertise in a newspaper, advertise in a brochure, or advertise in the telephone directory, and that was our intent to make something permanent in here to work towards correcting the problem that you just mentioned, and that was, like I said, why we had the effective date downstream to when it would give, when they would be up for renewal on the paid advertising, that they would have to include it at that time. And also, Representative Pestinger has a question or a comment that on another section, if you'd stand by there, I think you'd like to direct it to either the committee or maybe for your comments. Representative Pestinger?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just looking at all of the sections of the bill, and I wanted to ask Mr. Traeger how effective he might think the addition of this Class A misdemeanor might be and how far, in fact, it reaches under the provisions of this chapter.
Representative, I think that it would be considerably effective over what we have right now. And as far as reaching under the chapter, I think we'd probably look to just the unlicensed activity rather than trying to settle some type of civil dispute between a contractor on competency versus a consumer. Is that what you're...
Well, I noticed you were concerned about losing track of an individual, for example, and I was thinking that it looks like that this has been added to change misdemeanor to Class A misdemeanor, which is a maximum of $1,000 or 1 year in jail or both. And that, to me, it's just another tool at your disposal that might be useful in not losing track of someone, for example, if you thought it was a serious violation.
Representative, in that regard, I would say it would help us because if you notice, the bill also addresses that it turns into a summons if the person does not appear. The court system now, it's my understanding, the court system shares their summons list with the state troopers and driver's license and motor vehicle license plates. So if someone has a summons outstanding, they bring it to that person's attention, and it could eventually go into a warrant if I'm not mistaken. I think it would enhance greatly the ability to keep track of someone that's unlicensed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you. I noticed that we have, Doug Neely in Glen Allen, would you wish to testify at this time?
He is approaching the mic. One moment, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, I don't care to comment right at this particular time. We just received our copy of this bill over the printer just about 2 minutes ago. I'm in the process of reading it now, and I have some notes I may want to comment in a few minutes. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
I'd like to now go to Petersburg. Harvey, is it Bahana?
This is Petersburg, and Harvey had to go back to work, but he said that he would write you a letter.
Okay, is Donna Greenway there?
And Donna had to go back to work, too, so there's no one here to speak.
Okay, how about Sitka?
This is the moderator in Sitka. We have two people here to speak. The first witness is Mary Lou Valandry.
This is Mary Lou Valandry. That's spelled V-I-L-A-N-D-R-E. And I will have to agree that this is a little watered down from the original bill, but you have put some work to it. But the most important is educating the public. This is the consumer and also the people are out there that are not licensed. If they know what they're up against, they may either become legit or get out of the business. But I believe by educating the public, it's going to also cut down on your enforcement. It might help anyway. But just keep plugging away at it. I think eventually we'll get something everybody can work with.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate your comments, Mary. Do we have someone else in Sitka?
Yes, our next witness is approaching the mic.
Good morning. My name is Harry Chartier, C-H-A-R-T-I-E-R. I have two brief comments. I have to agree with the comments made earlier by the representative from the Associated General Contractors, with the exception of her comment on enforcement. I would like to see the enforcement in both the Department of Commerce and with the Department of Labor inspectors. The other comment that I'd like to make is more of a general nature. I appreciate the work that's gone into the bill, and I agree that with the bonding levels and the advertising requirements, and coupled with an effective enforcement program and hopefully an educational program for both the consumers and the non-licensed contractors, that we've got a pretty good start here on the bill that I think everyone agrees is important. Thanks.
Yes, appreciate your comments there, Harry. Do we have anyone perhaps in Fairbanks that have comments would like to testify on this, Terry?
Chairman, this is Terry Zinski again. I have one question to ask. That is on page 4, section 08-18-163. State agency, corporation, or authority, do those three names encompass Alaska Housing Finance Corporation?
That is page 4, line 13?
Yes.
Okay. That is the intent. My staff has informed me that you're that's true.
The reason I ask is I've talked with them before about requiring certain things, and they seem to feel that they are so quasi-governmental that many things don't really apply to them, and so I'd like you to perhaps strengthen the wording or make sure that the definitions totally include Alaska Housing Finance, because they're the ones who are, of course, loaning the money on the majority of the houses in the state, and through their wanting to see perhaps licenses or license numbers on their loan applications, this would greatly reduce the number of non-licensed activity in new construction as well.
Yes, Harry Traeger from, would you like to comment on Terry's question?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The way I read it, it does encompass Alaska Housing Finance, and also the Division of Investments, which is the small business loans, if they ever go back into operation. We currently do work with Alaska Housing Finance, and the other financial institutions, and they have in fact gone to the banks and told them that their applications have to include a copy of the contractor's license at the present time.
Thank you. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Are there anyone else out on the network that would like to testify at this time on the bill?
We have a witness approaching the mic, Mr. Carlisle in Anchorage again, sir.
Yes, Earl.
Yes, on this page 4, line 13, about the state loans, it covers the general contractor supplying his numbers, but it doesn't say anything about the specialty contractor subs. We want a little protection there, too. These are the corporates that are really giving us heck up here. Okay, over.
I don't quite understand your question there. Representative Furness has...
General contractor or the builder applies for a loan to build, and when he has to submit his own contractor's license, he can submit, and it's not too much effort if he's interested in the loan, a copy of all his subs that's going to be working under him, so that we get a little protection there too. Okay, over.
Yeah, I think that perhaps something like certificates of insurance or certificates of licensing that's probably many of the contractors require now of subs, something in that order. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, it is. So we have it in writing, and they can't manipulate around it. Okay, over.
Yes, Representative Furness has comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To Mr. Carlisle, it appears that it is probably covered. I make note of line 16 through 18, page 4. It states that the state agency, corporation, or authority shall make reasonable efforts to determine whether construction is proceeding in accordance with AS 08, 18, or 11 before releasing monies under a construction loan. If you look at page 1 of the bill, line 9, that's a reference. 08, 18, or 11 is amended by adding a new section to read. This new section does include both general contractors and subcontractors. So it appears that the state entity must use due deliberation to include both the general and the subs.
Okay, thank you. I really haven't had time to study it very well, so I didn't pick up on that. Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Are there anyone else out there on the network to testify? Hearing none, perhaps I'd like to go back and while we have some amended language that proposed, and I'd like to go back to the first page on section B and go over that again, exactly how we would, and it's my, you know, the language that we, certain of what we want, and it's my intent that we will have this language corrected today and maybe pass this bill out tomorrow with the amendment, but I want to make certain of our intent on that line 11 through 13.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative.
My understanding that we're going to substitute authorize to permit
or allow, yes.
Right, and on line 13, contractor, unless use individual partnership of corporation is registered under this chapter. I believe that's standard, isn't it?
Mr. Chairman, I mentioned that the word person has a definition apparently under Title 1.
Would you push the...
And that includes all that.
It's proper to keep it here. Then.
It's a person is fine. What I think we might want to add after the word person, the first on line 12 where it says to allow or permit a person, I would put comma required to be registered under this chapter, comma, to begin work. Clearly, we're not trying to deal with a situation in which a general has employees, but we're dealing only where they're acting as a separate or independent contractor.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. I hope that we, perhaps, Clark, you could review.
Be happy to.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative
Furness. I'm not sure what our determination was on page 1, line 28, having to do with the address. We take that around. Is that clear?
I think that the contractor's name and address, mailing address, and principal place of business, that was
address.
Yes, we're going with that.
That's the first item.
And like I said, that we're going to, we will schedule, try to get this corrected today, and the first thing tomorrow, pass this out of committee. And we thank you for coming.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
This is Don in Anchorage, sir.
Yes.
I'll add another comment. Is that permissible?
Yes, go ahead, Don.
Yes, getting back to the advertisement, it says, I really haven't had time to study this, but it says it has to include his address and his name and everything. That is really rough if you include in all your newspaper advertisements. I can understand it in the yellow pages, but in newspaper advertisements, if you're advertising two or three papers in the yellow pages too, that puts a great burden on a small contractor. Doesn't do much for the general of the big contractor, because he can write it off. The small man, it really restricts him, because most of us can only afford about four or five lines, and that'll take up three of them right there. So that the contractor's number and his name should be sufficient without everything else. His address includes the town, even in zip code, if you want to call it address. However, in the yellow pages, yes, it should all be included, but not necessarily in small ads in the, on the one ad section, which is only, you know, the guy advertises maybe a half-inch advertisement. That's all he can afford, just to keep his name in there. Over.
Yes, it was discussed that there's sometimes very difficult to, we had an earlier testimony that it was very difficult to follow a contractor that had just a P.O. box. We didn't, that someone had tried to trace one, had spent legal attorneys and fees and everything else trying to get the principal place of business, that they did business and had no success in doing that. And that was the intent of putting the principal place of business in the language.
On the his P.O. box, actually, available now is the copies of the contractor's registrations with the Department of Occupational Licenses, and a person just call in and ask for the man's address, and they should be the ones requiring that no P.O. box be submitted, or if it is, it's submitted with a physical address, as opposed to putting it in all the advertisements.
They do have, in my understanding, the Department of License does have that on the application form, but a lot of people in applying don't fill out that principal place of business now. Perhaps we could get more enforcement in that, into that area, if that's possible. And I can appreciate your concern of paid advertising. Have to put a lot of this language in when it's duplicated.
Anyway, if they just had the contractor's license number in all advertisements and available to the public, are the list of all the contractors, and they just go down the list, and if the number's there, if he's licensed, if he's not, he's not. And also, on the forms you fill out for your application for your license, if they had a little statement in there, you do not put your physical and your mailing address on this application, it will be rejected. They'll all respond in a hurry. Okay, over.
Okay, fine. That sounds, we'll certainly take that under advisement.
Under Walter.
And then at this time, we will end the teleconference. We appreciate everyone that was on the network to get up early morning to come to testify. and we'll be dealing with this final, dealing with this bill hopefully tomorrow.
And the next one. The moderator on that will tell a portion of the committee meeting, and we'll be doing another item on the agenda. I'd like to thank all the moderators that have participated this morning, and we will terminate the teleconference at this time. I'll clear the network for any official business. Unless there is some important business I need to hear. The network is clear.
The next bill I'd like to deal with is House Bill 341. No, no.
Why don't you go
Yeah, the next bill I'd like to deal with is House Bill 505, and it's the purpose of House Bill 505 is to update the penalty provisions in the insurance code in Title 21 of the Alaska statute. Under current law, many of the violations of the insurance code have criminal penalties and subject to prosecution as a misdemeanor. This legislation would create civil penalties for certain violations of the insurance code, and according to the Division of Insurance, this would prevent many of the administration violations of the insurance code, which many insurance companies kind of take lightly. And at this time, I'd like to have the witness come forward, identify himself for the record, and
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Don Koch. I'm Chief of the Market Surveillance Section with the Division of Insurance. The Division of Insurance worked closely with Mr. Martin, Representative Martin, in drafting this bill. It basically does do three things. Currently, every violation of the insurance code is a criminal violation, and that's because of a section of the law 2190.020 says that any violation is a misdemeanor unless there's a specific reference to a felony or something like that. Unfortunately, there is no similar provision for administrative remedies. If there is a violation, for example, that calls for a criminal penalty, in many cases there is no administrative penalty for that same violation. So what we have done here is we have moved all of the criminal provisions in the insurance code into one particular section in the insurance code. It's in the trade practices and fraud section. That way people can go to one place and see all the criminal provisions right there. Then what we've done is we've restructured all of the sections that had been criminal penalties. We've restructured those as administrative penalties. And we've also provided a general administrative penalty. So right with this kind of a system, any violation of the insurance code would be both a criminal, there would be both a criminal remedy and an administrative remedy. What this lets us do is to proceed on an administrative basis on things we know darn right well that the Department of Law isn't going to fool with. I mean, if there's a misdemeanor B, which I think is about a $500 penalty, no district attorney is going to tackle that. So we've got basically somebody who's out there violating the law that we can't touch. This will let us do it. We have also upgraded the administrative penalties. These have not been upgraded since 1966, and you've heard our story before on things that haven't been upgraded since 1966. So we've done that as well. We've tied in the criminal sections to some of the revisions that were made, I believe it was about 1980, to the criminal code, so that basically the language is now comport. For example, there's no longer a reference to perjury, whereas in our code there is, and so we've fixed that so that things are the same. The third element of the bill, and one that has been creating some real difficulties for us, creates a requirement for insurance companies to advise us when they have knowledge of somebody doing something wrong. And tied in with that, it also provides for immunity for persons providing that kind of information, and it's not limited to insurance companies. It can also go to insurance agents, it can go to other state people in say, in my position or other state regulators, it lets us designate those other state regulators as our agent, which would save us some money, frankly, if we had to do an investigation down there and they were willing to do it on our behalf. That way, two state agencies, theirs and ours, would have access to that information directly, and they would have the immunity for acting on our behalf when they draw this kind of information out. Right now, we've been doing it, but right now we have some real difficulty with sharing of this kind of information, so basically the crooks are one step up on us, because we can't do the same things they can do, or that's not quite the right way to say that, but I think you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Finally, what I've done is on the latest section by section, I've attached excerpts from the last three All Lines charters. That is it's a publication that we put out periodically. It's two, three, four times a year. And on that, I have highlighted or asterisked activities that have related to persons out of state. And it's alarming to us the frequency with which these appear. I mean, you know, every one of those is an out-of-state problem. We've had to travel out-of-state to deal with a number of these. We've had some very good cooperation from other states, but they're nervous. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Yeah, I'd just like to comment that we had the insurance industry was here earlier, and they indicated they had no major problems with the bill. It wasn't in love with it, but there was no problems with it themselves.
They did have some problems initially. We fixed that.
Yeah, worked with it in drafting many substances. And also, as you indicated, that the possibility of this would cut down the expense to the division now of enforcement, you indicated that would...
I guess the best way to say that is that it would ultimately reduce our need to have to expend even more and more funds as we see more and more of these outside cases arising. We're handicapped right now. There's many of them we can't do anything about.
We're not on teleconference. I just might ask your pleasure on the bill. There's a lot of meat into it, and I find it to be a very interesting subject matter, which I should have some familiarity with. But you know, I'll defer to the chair's discretion. I just wanted to ask your thinking on it. I mean, I could get in a discourse with this gentleman for several minutes, and I notice the floor session's coming up. But you know, I'm just asking what your pleasure is.
Yeah, it's my intention to move the bill to the next committee, which I think is Judiciary and sort of Finance. And
All right.
Do we have any other questions for the witness?
Trusting you.
Thank you.
If you do have questions, I'd be happy to answer them personally or however. Thank you.
Thank you.
For the motion?
Yes, sir. Do you have any comments?
No thanks, Mr. Chairman.
Yes,
committee
substitute for Bill 505.
Odd move that we pass committee substitute for House Bill 505, Labor and Commerce, out of committee. I think it's dated March 20th, 84, with individual recommendations in the applicable fiscal note. And ask unanimous consent.
Any objections? So be it. Nothing to come before the committee. We're adjourned.
Do you need to sign off on that?
Yeah.
We don't have the final. We can sign off on it tomorrow morning. Is that all right?
Okay. Yeah.
We'll sign off on 3:45.